Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Chof Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the beginning of the new perek, the second perek of Yuma, known as Perek Borishona. So, the Mishnah mentions that he who wants to do the Truma Sedeshin, which is the action of removing a panful of ash from the Mizbeach and putting it to the side of the ramp that leads up to the Mizbeach, he can come and do so even without being part of a formal choosing process, which is known as pious. That is how our Mishnah begins. However, as far as what really takes place, or historically what developed, we will find to be something much different. So the Mishnah, Borishona kol mi sheroitze litroim es hamizbeach toreim, at the beginning, anyone, that means in the beginning historically, anyone who wanted to do the process of Haromas Hadeshen, litrom, to remove or to lift out some ash from the altar fireplace, he can come and do so without being part of the choosing process, without the pious. Ubizman Shein Merubin, in the event that there were a few people, Merubin means a lot of people, that came to do this, each one claiming, I want to do it. So, how would we choose who is the one to actually do it? So, there would be a race. It says, Rotsen v'olim bekevesh. They would run run up the ramp. The kevesh is the ramp leading to the top of the altar. Kol ha-kodem es chaveru ba'arba amos, zocha. Anyone who came to within 4 amos wins. As far as what does that mean within 4 amos, that the Gemara will discuss. V'imhoyu shneim shovin, if 2 were equal, maybe you would call this a photo finish, that to casual observer you couldn't see who really got there first. Ha'memuna oimer lohen hatzbiu. So the memuna is the appointed one would say hatzbiu. Hatzbiu means to stick out your fingers. Rashi on Hatzbiu says, Hatzbiu hosiu etzbo sechem, kol echol yara etzboi, kim forsh to come on bepirkin. They would stick their fingers out, as will be explained later in the perek. Makifin voimden ba'gula. They would stand in a circle. Bo ha'mamuna v'noitel mitznefes me'al rosh shel echod mehen, u'mimenu pious maschilim nois. And the Mamuna would choose a very high number, and he would start counting from a chosen Kohen. He would remove his hat in order to indicate that he was going to be the one from whom the numbering would start, and he would keep counting and counting until the number would end on a particular Kohen, and he is the one that would do the activity, in this case the Truma Sedeshin. As Rashi goes on to say, V'hamemuna oimer kol shaminyan kolobo, kol means to end, anyone who the number ends on, hu zoiche, umotzi mipiv minyan, and he mentions a number, o mea, o shishim, 100, or 60, harbe yoser mishahoyu sham akehanim, a number much greater than the number of kohanim that were there, And he counts and keeps counting round and round, starting originally with the fellow that had removed his hat, and until the end of the counting. Let's continue now in our Mishnah. When we speak about them sticking out their fingers, what finger would they stick out? Which finger would they stick out? Achas oshtayim, one or two. This two is something that needs to be explained later. The ein motzien agudol b'mikdash, but as far as the thumb, gudol is a thumb, agudol is the thumb, that would not be extended in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, why would the thumb not be extended? Because someone can pull a prank using the thumb, if that were acceptable. In other words, as we described before, the Kohanim who were vying for a particular action would assemble around in a circle, and the counting would start with a particular Kohen. If the thumb was extended and you felt that the number was going to end by you, so you saw the number was getting close to an end, and that it would end up finishing on the guy next to you. So a person could conceivably extend his thumb and another finger spreading it far from the thumb, and it would give the impression that these are the fingers of two different people. And therefore he could cause the number to end on him one person earlier than in reality. So the Mishnah continues. Maise shehoyu shneim shovin v'rotzin v'oilin bekevish. An incident took place where they were running and they finished equal time. V'dochaf echod mehem es chavero, and one of them shoved off another guy, the other one, from the ramp. We're talking about at a pretty significant height. V'nofal v'nishbro ragloi, and he fell and broke his leg. V'kevan shiro based in shiboyin lidei sakona, when they saw that this running exercise or this method of determining who is going to be the Kohen is determined through this running, and it leads to danger. Hiskinu shilo yu tor minas hamizbeach elo b'payis. They resolved that the choice of who would be the one to do the pious, to do the Terumah Sedeshen, would be done only through pious, through the choosing action that we described while we learned the Rashi before. Arba pious hoyu shom v'zeh ha-pious rishon. There were four choosings throughout the day, and this was the first one, the choosing for the Terumah Sedeshen. We'll see Mishnah later on, which describes the pious hasheni, and different pious will be described as we continue in the perek. The Gemara, v'ha meikara, my time alota kinu lo rabbonon paiso. At the very beginning, meikara means at the beginning. In this case, before the misfortune transpired, why did they not establish a pious, a choosing method, what we can call it, the counting method that we featured? Why was that not the first choice? Why was it left open, so to speak? And we saw that if a couple people come, so then they do the running thing. Why? So you will see now a diamond that appears, and it's called Aleph. And on the side of the Gemara, we have under our Nosei Mivneh. Nosei is the topic heading, and Mivneh is the structural note. Shtei Lishonos. There will be two versions. Lasbir Loma Lo Tiknu Pious Meikara. Two explanations as to why they didn't establish Pious, the choosing method, at the very outset. So the first Lashon says, Me'ikara, before the misfortune had transpired, Sovor, they thought, Kevon Davidus Lailahi, Velo Chashiva Lahu, Velo Asu. Since we're talking about a nighttime activity, when the Truma Sedeshin ash is removed from the Mizbeach, it's toward the end of the night, but it's, we've learned already, it's around the time of Kriyas HaGever, as we learned in our previous Shiurim, which is a time that's, according to one of the opinions we saw, it's when the rooster crows, so you can imagine it's pre-dawn hours. So it was felt that since that is the time that this avoda, this action, is done, it doesn't have significance in the eyes of the Kohanim. And they wouldn't come. In other words, if there was a choosing method, no one Kohen would be sufficiently motivated to come for something that is perceived as unimportant. As Rashi says, Kevon da'avodas lailohi, hayol ve'uchsher v'laylo, since it's something that's allowed to be done at night, when we say allowed to be done at night, most sacrificial activity is not allowed to be done at night, but this was allowed to be done at night. Lo chashiva leilu kehanim, it's not significant. It's a nighttime activity, so it's not significant in their eyes. Velo osu l'insuya lo, and they're not going to come to argue or compete with one another. That was the original feeling. So there's no need to establish a method that would be necessary because people are arguing over something. The argument is never going to happen. However, kevan dechazu dekaosu v'osu lidei sakona, takinu la paisa. However, when they saw that without the pious, a dangerous situation could arise, as was illustrated in the incident, so they said, we've got to do something about it, and they established the pious. Question. Vare evorim muftorim, davodis lailohi. The burning of the limbs of the sacrifices that were slaughtered and offered during the day, their limbs, the evorim ufdorim, are burnt through the night. V'tokinu lo rabbanan paisa. And in one of the later mishnayos, so we will see that a pious was established for the burning of the limbs. Rashi points out that on Daf Chof Hei, we will see that in the next pious, it was decided mimale ivorim lekevish uminai kevish lemizbeach, who would be chosen to bring the limbs to the ramp, and who would be chosen to bring the limbs from the ramp to the altar, which involves the burning of the limbs. So you see that you have a nighttime activity, and from the very outset, it was settled or determined through pious. So the Gemara responds, the case of the Eivon Mufdorim is not parallel to the case of Trumas Hadeshen, because the case of the Eivon Mufdorim is called Soif Avoida Diyamama Hi. It's really the end of daytime activity. It's the end of the sacrificial ritual. And hence, it has importance in the eyes of Kehanim, and without a civil method of establishing who should do it, so it will be strifeful. There will be a lot of argument and contention over it. So they had to have a method from the very outset. The Gemara asks, regarding the Truma Sedeshen, Ha Nami Tchilas Avoida Diyamamahi, Truma Sedeshen is really the beginning of the daytime activity. So if you're saying that once something's associated with daytime, it will be something that needs to be settled through by pious, so why should there be a difference between Eivor Muftorim, which you're calling a sofa voted yomama, and the case of the Trumas Hadeshen? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kidei Shiodo of Lutrumas Hadeshen, a Kohen that washed his hands from the Kior for the purpose of doing Trumas Hadeshen, Lamochar, when day comes, the next day, Ein Sorech Lekadesh, he doesn't have to sanctify his hands again. Sanctification of hands and feet is a prerequisite for serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So we see from Rabbi Yochanan that if he sanctified his hands and feet for the Trumas Hadeshen, he doesn't have to do it again. Shikvar Kidesh Mitchilas Avoda. Now we've dashed underlined the key expression. He has already done it from the beginning of the Avoda, of the daytime Avoda. The Gemara says no, this is not a true question, because as far as what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, Amor rather say Shikvar Kidesh Mitchila Le'avoda. His sanctification of hands and feet through washing them from the water of the Kior for the Trumas Hadeshen isn't that the Trumas Hadeshen is the beginning of daytime activity, but when he was sanctifying his hands and feet for the Trumas Hadeshen, he was doing it with the mindset that this is that he's doing it for the purpose of Avoda. That's he did it at the outset when he was washing them. At the point in time that he was washing them, he had in mind to do Avoda, but not that the Trumas Hadeshen is called the beginning of the daytime Avoda. But it's sufficient that he had in mind to do Avoda, so when day comes, he doesn't have to wash his hands again. Ika Diamri, another version. We were asking why at the outset was there no establishment of pious for Trumas Hadeshen. So the Gemara explains, second version, Beikara Savur, at the outset it was felt, Kevon Deika Oines Shina Lo Asu, since it's an issue of getting up, and it's Oines Shina without a literal translation means it's very difficult to get up from sleep. So since it is that way, that it's difficult to get up from sleeping, so people aren't going to come, and hence there's no need for settling contention over something that it's never going to transpire. When they noticed that people were coming to do the Trumas Hadeshen and it led to a dangerous situation, Tokinu lo rabbonon paisa, the rabbonon established pious. The Gemara asks, Varei evar mufdorem deika oines shina v'tokinu lo rabbonon paisa. Well, regarding the Evarim and Fdorim that are offered up at night, they can be offered up at night, and at night people are tired, they're going to fall asleep, so you have the Oines Shina factor here, and yet they established pious for it. The Gemara says you can't compare the case of the Evarim and Fdorim, which in effect was a continuation of that day's activity, with the case of Trumas Hadeshen, which involves someone waking up from sleeping. Shiny migna mi mekam. It's the case of migna, of going to sleep, is different than the case of mekam, waking up from sleep. Namely, as far as trying to stay awake, it's easier to stay awake than to wake up from a state of having been asleep. Therefore, for the Evarim Uvdorim, which is a characteristic of something involving people that were up already, and the issue was just can they stay awake? So we need to have the pious. There will be competition for that otherwise. However, with regard to people waking up to do something, since we're talking about something that was done when most people are still sleeping, it was felt at the outset that there's not going to be any competition and contention over that kind of that timed activity. The timing is the critical issue with the second Lashon, the timing. According to the first Lashon, it had to do with the quality, the significance of the action itself. Let's continue in the Gemara. V'takanto lehach giso havoi? Was the takona, the establishment of the pious, really because of the incident that took place, that we described before in the mission of falling off the Mizbeach? Takanto lehai giso havoi. The takona was for another purpose. Desanya, mi shezocha b'trumas hadeshen, he who was chosen to do the trumas hadeshen, zocha b'sidur marocha u'b'shnei gziri eitzim. He also gained the privilege of setting up the marocha, setting up the fireplace on the mizbeach, and the placing upon the fireplace two additional boards, the shnei gziri eitzim. So the need for pious is because we have to choose who is going to be doing all of those activities. Now Rashi points out that being the Savora, so at the outset there should have been pious, because the one chosen to do the Trumas Hadeshen, in fact he is the one that's going to do these other significant activities. Let's take a look at Rashi together on the fourth line under the Gemara text. The reason that one would assume that pious was necessary is because the one who was chosen to do the Trumas Hadeshen would do these things as well. And since they're all concentrated in one Kohen, so we have what's in effect important activities. Umeikara bo pious. We established, truth be told, in the first Lashon, that if something is of significance, people are going to come and argue over it. And since the one chosen to do the Trumas Hadeshen is the one who is going to be doing these other activities, the Sidur Marocha and the Shnei Gzir Eitzim, there should have been pious at the outset. Omar of Ashi, and here we have an explanation. Take note that we have a long answer marking. Omar of Ashi, Shtei Takonas Havu. In effect, there were two rulings. Meikora Savur Lo Asu. At the outset, it was felt people aren't going to come. Kohanim aren't going to come for the Trumas Hadeshen. Kevan dechozu dekaasu, v'asu nami lidei sakona. When it was beheld that people were coming, and not only that, but there was competition, and that led to a dangerous situation. Tokinu la paisa. Notice we dashed under the lines to call this one, because we have to note there were two stages of takana making, of rulings. So at this point they established the need for pious. Kevon to tokinu la paisa lo asu. Once they instituted a choosing method, as we described before, they stand around, a big high number is picked, and only upon whom the number ends is the one chosen. So people said, they stopped coming. Amri, each one figuring, mi yemar de misrami lon. Who says that it's going to turn out, the number is going to end on me? Hoda takinu luhu. They then instituted another ruling, mi shezocha b'trumas hadeshen, Yizke v'sidur marocho u'b'shnei gzirei eitzim. Ki hechi d'nesu v'nefaisu. In order to motivate them to come for the pious, more actions were added to benefit or to honor the one that was going to win the Trumas Hadeshen. And by adding more activities to the Trumas Hadeshen winner, people would be Kohanim would be motivated to come. Ubizman Shehain Merubin Kol HaKoidim Es Chavero Ba'ar Ba'amos. Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa will be dealing with the issue of the four Amos that the Mishnah made reference to. The Mishnah said whoever gets into the four Amos first is the winner. So we have a marking that we want to draw your attention to. We have a long marking that features Rav Papa, where Rav Papa introduces his comment by saying certain things are clear to me, but I have a question. And all of this is Rav Papa's speech, which takes you to the top of Omid Beis. Omar Rav Papa, Pshito Li, the following is obvious to me. And what we will see here is three points that are obvious. On the final line, the bottom line of this Omid Gemara, you see, boy, Rav Papa. That will be Rav Papa's question. So Rav Papa says that Pshito Li, it's clear to me, Arba Amos da Arolo, when the Mishnah makes reference to he who gets into the four Amos first, it doesn't mean the four Amos before they started ascending the ramp. It means four Amos on the ground. Rashi, five lines up from the bottom. The Arba Amos Karka Hasmuchos Koidim Alois Lekevish. The four Amos on the ground that are within four Amos of the ramp, but before you actually get onto the ramp. So Rav Papa says that if you were to think it's those four Amos, that's not what we're talking about. The Arba Amos Da'arolo, why? How does Rav Papa know that it can't refer to the four Amos within the Kevesh? Because we know it says Rotzen V'Oilin Bar Kevesh Tanan. The four Amos was after they started running on the ramp. If you look in the Mishnah itself, you can see, and if you need take advantage of our arrow marking to the side of the Gemara, you'll notice on that line in the Mishnah where you see the arrow, it's the third line from the top, it said Rotzen V'Oilin B'Kevesh Kol HaKoidim Es Chavero Bar Ba'amos. So the four Amo issue is within the context of they're running on the ramp, they're running up the ramp. So that precludes the Arba Amos Da'ara suggestion, which meant the four Amos on the floor within four Amos. He gets to the point where he's within four Amos of the ramp first. That's not the pshat. We have to be speaking about four Amos on the ramp, but we haven't said something clearer yet. The Gemara continues. We have this as number two. Komaisa Namilo, the first four Amos from the ground level. So he who gets to within the first four Amos from the ground, that's also not the Pshat. Rotzen V'Oilin B'Kevesh Tanan, V'Hodar Kol HaKoidim Es Chavero. It says in the Mishnah, they would start running up the ramp, and after they're already running, so then he who overtakes his friend within four Amos is stated. So since we see that they are running up the ramp, it's not a reference to being within four Amos of the very base of the ramp. They're already running up the ramp. They've certainly covered more than four Amos at that point. So it can't be whoever gets to within four Amos on the ramp, but from the floor, from the base of the ramp. Number three, Debeni Beni Nami Loi, to say that he who gets within four Amos of the midway mark and choose some random four Amos within the 32 Amos of the ramp's length, that's also unlikely. the lo mesaima milsa. It's not clear. It's not designated. So we won't really be able to determine who is the one to get within those four amas if it's a random four amas in the middle of the ramp. So the Gemara continues. Pshita li degabi mizbeach tnan. It's clear that what are the four amos? It's four amos within the top of the mizbeach. However, my question is, says Rav Popa, after it appearing clear that the four amos mentioned is four amos within the top of the ramp, which puts you within four amos of the altar itself, the question is as follows. Boy Rav Popa, Arba Amos Shomru, the four amos of being within the Mizbeach, does that mean Vahadi Amo Yisoid V'Amo Soivev? That means that it's including the Amo. The Amo is, of course, the measure. One Amo of altar base, and one Amo of altar Sovev, the ledge around the, a little bit above the midway mark. So that the four Amos is includes within it the two Amos of the Sod and Amo. And if you take advantage of the called mediocre diagram at the side of the Gemara, this is what we've illustrated is we'll call it a cutaway view with the ramp being featured in the what you see there as the diagonal leading up. The ramp leads up to the top of the Mizbeach, and you notice how it overshadows, or it's resting above or on top of the Amo of the Yesod and the Amo of the Sovev. So that the four Amos that we're talking about, according to this possibility, it means he's within four Amos of the very top of the Mizbeach, discounting the fact that there's an Amo Yesod and Amo Sovev, which the ramp is set on above or on top of them. Oy Dilma, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, or maybe when we speak about the four Amos, it's Bar Me Amo Yesod Vi Amo Sovev. The four Amos is not including, but rather it's excluding them, which means then that when we say that you're within four Amos of the Mizbeach, it would mean you're within four Amos of where the Yesod begins at that point underneath the ramp, which practically speaking would mean that you're at the, we'll say, within six Amos of the very top, the Gag of the Mizbeach. So when we speak about being within four Amos of the top of the Mizbeach, is it within four Amos of the top of the Mizbeach, literally the top of the Mizbeach, which excludes the Amo of Yesod and the Amo of Sovev, or is the four Amos excluding them, meaning that the four Amos doesn't include them within it? So you would then say that you have to be within four Amos of the beginning of the Mizbeach at that point on the ramp, which would mean that you'd be within six Amos of the actual top of the Mizbeach. So this remains unresolved. Teku. So just to review the last point, that when there was competition for the Trumas HaDeshen, before Pius was established, there was a type of relay race that took place, running up the ramp, and he who got within four amos of the top of the Mizbeach, so he would be the one chosen to do the Trumas Hadeshen. That was as far as the very beginning of the Trumas Hadeshen history, choosing who would be the one to do it. When we saw that things became tension-filled and competitive, and it could lead to something dangerous, so Pius was instituted. We continue, second line from the top of Omid Beis, Ve'im hoyu shneim shoven, Hamemuna omer lahem hatzbiu. If in the race to the top, two came out equal, so then there was a need for the counting method. Tana, hotziu etzposechem leminyan. When the Mishnah says hatzbiu, so this Bryce explains, hatzbiu means stick out your fingers for the counting. The Gemara asks, v'neminu lididhu, why not just count the people? Why do we have to focus our counting on their extended fingers? The Gemara explains that this Mishnah supports that which Reb Yitzchok teaches. Messiah lay the Reb Yitzchok, the need for extending fingers supports Reb Yitzchok. And here our topic heading is just that. Osir limnos es Yisrael, the prohibition of counting Jews. Even if the purpose of your counting is for the fulfillment of a mitzvah. And that is what we have over here, the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen. Nevertheless, you cannot count people. And when we say count people, it means literally counting the person. And that is in distinction to counting his finger. The Gemara here raises an issue that is discussed in the body of halachic literature, and that has to do with census taking. Is that something that is allowed? Census taking in the modern sense involves filling out forms or maybe some type of a computer electronic communication with a central authority. What is allowed and what is not, that is a halachic discussion. But for our purposes, to keep things in the very simplistic, immediate level, a distinction is made between counting actual people. What that means, you look at the person and count him one, and another person is two, and another person is three, as opposed to counting extended fingers of the people, that we see is allowed. So Rav Yitzchok says counting people, counting Jews, is something not allowed, even if your purpose is for a dvar mitzvah, for mitzvah fulfillment. We have some numbering, because there are a couple stages in figuring out what's the source for this. Dichtiv, where do we see this prohibition? We see Vayifkedem Bebezek. And the assumption right now is that Bezek would be something that is, broken, shattered pieces of whatever. Rashi on the third line from the top says, the Bezek Loshoin Shivrei Charosim, shards, broken pieces of clay, Noto Kol Echad Ve'echad Cheres Ve'hishlich Lefonov Umonu HaCharosim. Each person would, instead of himself being counted, would throw in front of the one who was doing the counting some shards, and the person counting would count the pieces of clay that were there, broken clay, to determine the number of people. Anyway, you see from this pasuk the avoidance of counting people, the preference, or the necessity rather, to count the shards. Maskif lo Ravashi. Ravashi challenges this. Mimai dahai bezek lishna de mivzak. Who says that in this pasuk the word bezek means something that was crushed, and we were referring to the broken pieces of clay. V'dilma shmo de masa. Who? Maybe it's the name of a city. Kedichti vayimtzu es Adoni Bezek b'bozek. There is a pasuk that says that Adoni Bezek was found in a town called Bezek. So when the pasuk says Vayif Kedain b'Bezek, there was a counting in Bezek, it doesn't mean through shars, it means in a town called Bezek. Elo mehocha, rather, from the following we will see the prohibition, the avoidance of counting people. The pasuk says, Vayishama shol esom vayifkideim ba tloim, and Shol gathered the people and he counted them through sheep. In other words, each person would bring with him or produce a sheep, and the king would count the sheep. Omar Rabbi Elazar, Kol Amoines Yisrael Oiver V'Lav. Anyone who counts Jews, counts them individually, so he is in violation of a negative command. Shenemar, the pasuk says, V'hoya Mispar Bnei Yisrael Kechol Hayom Asher Lo Yimad, and the number of Jews will be like the sand of the sea that you shall not. Now, we're not giving the literal translation, but in this context, Asher Lo Yimad, that you shall not count. That would make counting people a negative command. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar Oiver b'shnei lavim. There are two negative offenses, violated by counting people. Shenemar lo yimad, v'lo yisofer. It says in the pasuk as well, asher lo yisofer. That shall not be counted. Again, we're translating the Gemara in the context of the Gemara because. The simple meaning of the pasuk simply would mean that the number of Jews will be like the amount of sand at the sea, which is not countable. But we're explaining it not just to mean that it's not countable, but that you are forbidden to count. You'll notice that we have a slash mark here, and on the side of the Gemara, we point out. By the star, Shimush B'Simun Kazeh, this slash mark is Kadesh Yeh Hafrodo Bein Inyanim, to separate topics. Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Rav Shmuel tells us, Rav Yonason raised a contradiction. Ksiv, the Pasuk says, V'hoya Mispar B'nei Yisrael Kechol Hayom. The number of Jews will be like the number of grains of sand at the sea. What we are to take from this is that there is a number. In other words, they can be counted. They can means the potential for counting them exists. They have a number. Well, see if there's another. No, the pasuk also says, "Asher lo yimad lo yisfer." They're uncountable. You can't count them. So you have to make up your mind: is the number something that can be counted, or it's a number that we can't count? Here, the discussion is not in terms of the prohibition of counting, but it's in terms of the vastness of the number. Is it something that can be counted or not? Lo kashya. And the marking that you see, the diamond marking, features resolutions to this particular issue. So, number one, lo kashya. Kan bizman shisro oisin ritzonu shemokoyim. Kan bizman she'ein oisin ritzon shemokom. One pasuk refers to a time period in which Jews are fulfilling the mitzvahs. That would be associated with the pasuk of asher lo yimad lo yisofer, meaning there are so many of them that you can't possibly count them. And then you have kan bizman she'ein oisin ritzon shemokom. Then the pasuk of Vahoya Mispar Benesra, then they are finite, so to speak, or they are limited to a number. A second approach, Rabbi Oimer, Mishum Abba Yossi Ben Destoy, Lo Kashia, Kan Bidei Odom, Kan Bidei Shamayim. It depends. The two psukim reflect two, from a human perspective and the other from the Almighty's perspective. From the human perspective, the numbers are so great they can't count them. From the Almighty's perspective, might be a very large number, but he can count them. In other words, he can perceive the number. We continue. Omar Rav Nehiloi Bar Idi Omar Shmuel. Kevan Shinisman Odom Parnas Al Tzibur Misasher. Once a person is appointed to be a leader of the community, he gains wealth. And this we see from Psukim. Meikor Ksiv Aifkedeim Bebezek, Ulubsov Ksiv Aifkedeim Betloyim. They were counted initially with bezek, with broken pieces of clay, and then they were counted with sheep. Now, this is a reference to Shaul HaMelech leading the Jews into battle, and there was a need for counting how many people there were for military purposes. So before he was appointed king, so he was, the pasuk describes him as counting with bezek. Afterwards, he is described as counting them with sheep, sheep being worth much more. The Gemara asks, how is this an illustration of this Maimer of Shmuel, that once you're appointed to a position of leadership, you merit wealth? V'dilma miditu, maybe the substance used for the counting was supplied by the people themselves, and not from Shaul. So the Gemara says, "Imkay my rabusa de milsa." If that were the case, so then what's the chiddush? What's the point? Just to tell me a historical piece of information that they used pebbles, or they used pieces of shard, and then they for another counting they used sheep. That has no significance. Therefore, in order to appreciate the pasuk in a chiddush way, the statement of Shmuel takes on a much more significant meaning, that before he was anointed as king, so he was not a man of means, and he supplied his own shards for their counting. But afterwards he was able to supply sheep, of which he had many, indicating wealth. There is a pasuk that we have written on the side of the Gemara, from the book of Samuel, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Vav, Vayovo Shaul Ad Ir Amalek, Vayorev Ba Nochal. Shaul was battling Amalek, and it says, Vayorev Ba Nochal. Now, just by way of background, Shaul was commanded to eradicate the Amalekites, and eradicate means not just the military force, but men, women, children, and animals as well. The pasuk says Vayorev Benachal, and we should point out that Shaul did not fulfill the command of the Torah. We have a point, and it's going to we call this a long point. Omar Rav Moni Al Iske Nachal. When the pasuk says, and there was striving, Vayorev has like Lushan of Riv, there was striving concerning Nachal, so Rav Moni says it's a remez, it's a hint to that which takes place in a Nachal. Nachal is the type of land, it's a type of, called a dry valley, in which an eglo arufa is processed. The eglo arufa is a reference to the breaking of the neck of a calf that will take place in the event that a murder victim is found between two cities. So the closer of the two cities and their leaders bring out a calf, and it's neck is broken, and along with a declaration that they make. So the story here involving Shaul and the war with Amalek, where he spared the animals, Rav Moni says this incident is connected, and we'll see through logic, to the issue of Eglo Arufa. And we have some markings here to help highlight two contrasting situations involving Shaul and the Kodesh Baruch Hu's reaction to him. B'sha'ah she'omar lo HaKodesh Baruch Hu l'Shaul, when the Almighty spoke to Shaul and commanded him, Lech v'kiso es Amalek, go and smite Amalek. Omar, so Shaul reasoned internally in his mind. He said, Uma nefesh achas. Omro Torah, Hove eglo arufa. Mind you, for one lone murder victim that found between two cities, the Torah says you must go through this ceremony of Egla Rufa, the breaking of the animal's neck. Kol hanefoshes halolu alachas kama v'kama. If the Torah expresses its compassion and atonement seeking for the murder of a lone individual, how much more so should we spare all of these people? V'im odom chota behemo ma chota. If there was a command to destroy the people because man had sinned, what about the commandment to destroy their animals? When, if you say that amongst a group of people the adults sinned, the concept of sinning can't be applied to the youngsters, so why is the Torah commanding the obliteration of Amalek? Yotza Basko V'omra, a heavenly voice came forth, the Amrullah, and said, Al Tihi Tzadik Harbe, quoting, this is a posuk in Sefer Keheles that says, don't be overly righteous. In other words, you are trying to you spared Amalek out of a sense of compassion. Compassion is certainly a worthy attribute, but don't be overly compassionate. Don't be overly righteous. Ubashah shamar lo Shaul adoyeg. And when Shaul, who was the king at the time that David HaMelech was running from his wrath, from Shaul's wrath, there was an incident where David's life was in danger, and he received food from the city of Nov. Nov Ir HaKohanim was a city of Kohanim, and in fact historically it was one of the places that the Mizbeach stood temporarily. So with that background in mind, we should have mentioned that David sought refuge, sought food from the people of Nov, and they eventually gave him bread to eat. It was based on Migdash bread in actuality. And upon hearing this, so David, at this point he was not a king, his arch rival, the king of Israel, Shaul, upon hearing that someone saved David, his rival, he ordered them to be killed. He ordered the city of Novi Rakunin to be killed. And the Gemara says, "Ubishol shomer lo Shaul Doeg," when Shaul commanded Doeg, one of his counselors, "Save ato ufga b'kohanim, go you and smite the kohanim, all those that were." All right, let's continue in the Gemara. Yotza Basko v'omalo, the heavenly voice came and said to Shaul, Al tir shaharbe, don't be overly evil. Don't want him. What did you do? You want to plan to kill out the entire city because a couple kohanim offered salvation to David? Well, such a decision would be overly evil. Omar Rav Huna, Kamalo choli velo margish gavro demore siate. Rav Huna says how much one avoids sickness and doesn't feel any pain when he is a person that's being assisted by the Almighty. Now, this idea of kama lo choli velo margish gavad Messiah, the Mor Messiah, will be illustrated in the Gemara. Shaul ba'achas v'osalo. Shaul sinned. He stumbled once, and that was it for him. As a result of his sin, he was killed, or he died, and his kingdom came to a halt. David b'shtayim v'lo olsalo. David failed on two occasions, and it did not have an effect on him. The Gemara illustrates these, and you can see we've used a house marking to highlight Shaul and David. So, Shaul b'achas mahi. What do you mean that Shaul stumbled once? What was the stumbling that you're saying from that he never rose, he never regained his prominence? The Gemara says, Maisa de Agag. That's the incident involving Shaul sparing Agag in the battle whereby he killed out Amalek. He left Agag, their leader, he left him alive. And that's the sin of Shaul, which eventually led to his downfall. The question is, Va'ika Maisa de Nov Yirat Kohanim. If you're saying Shaul has a sin, has something that is responsible for his downfall, why do you opt for the Maisa de Agag when there's the incident involving Nov Yirat Kohanim, which certainly was much earlier historically? The Gemara says, A Maisa de Agag Siv. Regarding the incident involving Agag, it says, Nichamti ki imlachti es Shaul lemelech. So you see, the Pasuk itself says that the Kodesh Baruch Hu's regrets, so to speak, concern the Mice of Agag, a Mice de Agag, regarding the incident of his sparing the king of the Amalekites. It says that the Kodesh Baruch Hu was upset. So far, what do we see? That if someone doesn't have siyata dishmaya, someone doesn't have heavenly assistance, so then even upon one sin, he can be removed. David b'shtayim. David, on the other hand, has two offenses, and nevertheless, since he had the divine assistance, he remained in office, and he remained the founder of the Davidic dynasty for posterity. What are the two incidents? Mai nihnu de Uria u de Hasota. The case of Uria involves his sending Uria, who was the former husband of Bathsheba, and he sent Uriah to the front lines in battle where he would inevitably be killed. And the Hasota has to do with our topic from before, the issue of David HaMelech counted the people, which is something that is forbidden to do. The Gemara asks, and you'll see that we have a triangle which raises questions indicating that there are more sins, that if you're already accounting for David's sins, what about the following? V'ha ikonami maisa de Bathsheba. Isn't there his taking of Bathsheba, and he took her as his wife in, we'll say, under dubious circumstances? Isn't that something to be counted? The Gemara says, we're not going to count that because he was punished for that. Hosam ifra'u mine. He was punished for that, dichtiv. V'es ha-kivso yishalem ar-ba-toyim. For the kivso, which is a parable to, or an analogy to Bathsheba, it says you will pay four times. And the four times are Yeled, Amnon, Tamar, v'Avshalom. four unfortunate incidents that befell David. The Yelid is a reference to the first child that he bore with Bathsheba. That child died. Amnon and Tamar, these are children of David that were engaged in, we'll say, questionable activities from a moral standpoint, and that was was very shameful. And there was the incident of Avshalom, his son, that rebelled against him and eventually died. So he paid for that. Therefore, there's no need for our counting that as an offense that remains with David, and nevertheless he survives because he had the Siyata Dishmaya. The Gemara continues with a question. Hasam Nami, but with regard to the is being, let's say, seduced into counting the people, he ifru mine, he paid for that. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Vayitein Hashem dever biYisrael me'aboker v'ad eis moed. At that point, there was a plague of dever that afflicted the Jewish people from that particular morning until the Eis Moed, until sometime later in the day. So there was a punishment for that, for the counting. So why do you count that along with the Mice of Uriah? Said Uriah Udahasota. So the Gemara says the reason we're counting that as a sin and his not really having paid for it is Hasam lo ifru migufe. He didn't bodily pay for it. Question: Hasam nami lo ifru migufe. In the case of Bathsheba, which you claimed the was not counted as a sin because he already paid for it, but he didn't pay for that bodily. We mentioned the four punishments that he received. Yelid, Amnon, Tamar, Avshalom wasn't anything bodily. Must have lied. If for Migufe, in fact, he experienced a physical bodily punishment. Yomar of Yudam Arav, Shisha Chadoshim Itzdara David, Uporshu Heimenu Sanhedrin. David experienced 6 months of Saras, a skin affliction, and at that time, the high court separated from him, had no dealings with him. Vinistalka Heimenu Shchina. And the divine presence departed from David as well. Dichtiv, Yoshuvu li yirecha v'yodei edosecha. Uksiv, Hashiva li sason yishecha. The pasuk indicates a prayer for Hashiva, return, for the return of the divine presence. The Gemara asks, V'homarav, what about the following sin? Kibel David loshen hara. Rav says that David had accepted, had believed evil talk, evil speech concerning Mephibosheth, where, without getting into the entire incident, you can look it up in the Tanakh, but when David was on the run from Avshalom, so there was talk that there was a gentleman by the name of Tziva, who was a slave of Mephibosheth, who spoke ill of his master Mephibosheth, telling him things of a wrongful nature to David, and David accepted those stories. So the question is, if you're counting sins of David, and nevertheless he survived because he had divine assistance, why not mention this as a third sin? The Gemara answers, Kishmuel. That means Rav Huna, who mentioned sins. In other words, he mentioned this idea of having, he who has divine assistance can survive even though he's guilty of numerous sins. Well, that is because why Rav Huna didn't mention Kibel David Lo Shana, because Rav Huna is Kishmuel. He holds like Shmuel, Diomar Lo Kibel David Lo Shana Hara. David did not believe the story that Tziva had told him about Mephibosheth. Ularav Nami, the Omar Kibel David Loshen Hara. According to Rav, who says that David accepted Loshen Hara, Ha Ifru Mine. Well, he did pay for it, therefore it's not an example of what we said before under Rav Huna's name of Lo also Lo. The Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav Bishol Shomar Loi David Lemifi Boishes, when David, as a result of having accepted the evil speech, David said to Mephibosheth, concerning whom Tziva, that slave, had said negative things. So David said to Mephibosheth, Omarti atov Tziva techalkus asoda. Instead of Mephibosheth being the sole owner of the property, he divided it between Mephibosheth and his slave Tziva. Well, when David did that, Yotza Baskol v'Yomerlo, the heavenly voice came and announced, Rechavam v'Yerovam Yechalkas HaMalchus, that following your son's reign, Shlomo Melech, his son, Rechavam, will not maintain a kingdom or a monarchy over all of Israel. He will split it with Yerovam ben Nevat. So, just like David had split Mephibosheth's property, he was punished with having his kingdom split as well. The Pasuk, so let's just to go over this section of Gemara. Rav Huna was pointing out how when you have divine assistance, even if you sin a couple of sins, several sins, you nevertheless will survive. If you don't have that divine assistance, so even upon one offense, a person can be removed. Ben Shana, the Gemara continues, Ben Shana, Shaul b'mocho. That translated would mean that Shaul was a year old when he ascended the throne. But that wasn't the case. He was an adult. Omar Rav Huna, Kiben Shana Shalom Tom Tam Chet. When he was chosen to be king, he was an individual who had never sinned. He had not tasted the taste of sin. You can imagine the level of piety that Shaul was on. Maskif lo Rav Nachman Yitzchok. Rav Nachman challenges this explanation. He says, "V'emo keben shana shemeluchloch betit ubetzoya." Say he's like a one-year-old. Doesn't mean that he's a one-year-old in terms of being sinless. It means a one-year-old that's filthy. Like a child who's left alone to play in the mud, he becomes filthy. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok spoke about Shaul in very negative terms, that saying that when he ascended the throne, he was full of dirt, meaning he was full of sin. Well, Achviu Leil Rav Nachman Siyuta Bechalmei. Rav Nachman, who said this negative pshat concerning Shaul, was shown a siyuta, is a nightmare. Chalmei is a dream, a nightmarish dream. Well, he understood that he did something wrong by making this suggestion that Shaul HaMelech was appointed to office or anointed as king while he was full of sins. So, Rav Nachman receiving being punished by this nightmare, he says, "Omar ne'enesi lochem atzmos Shaul ben Kish. I humble myself to the bones of Shaul." Hodar chazos siyuta b'chamei, and again he had a nightmare. Omar, and he then said, "Ne'enesi lochem atzmos Shaul ben Kish melech Yisrael," acknowledging Shaul to be the king of Israel. So that was his higher form of hachno, of humility and recognition of the greatness of Shaul. Omar of Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Mipnei ma lo nimshcha malchus beis Shaul. You can see we have another marking, and this highlights, as you can see here and three lines from the bottom, these are questions regarding Shaul and his kingdom. So Rav Yudah Mashmul asks, why is it Mipnei ma lo nimshcha malchus beisha? Why did his kingdom not last very long? Mipnei shelo haya bo shum doifi. Ironically, it's because he had no sins, he had no lacking. He was was the personification of perfection. He had no dofi. The Amar of Yochanan, Mishum Rav Shimon ben Yotzadak. Here we have a double underline highlighting Maimros of Rav Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak. This is the first of them. He says, Ein mamidim parnas al atzibor elim kein kupa shel shrotzen tuya loy me'achorov. A person is not to be appointed leader of a community unless, now here we'll literally translate, unless he has a box of shrotzim, of varmints, of worms, slung over his back. In other words, only someone that has some type of, we'll say, problematic background or weak background, he is to be appointed leader, not someone who is the personification of completeness, of shleimus, of perfection. Why is it important that a leader who's appointed, a person appointed as a leader, should have some, some elements of a dark background? Shem tazuach daito olav, if he becomes a little too conceited and heavy-handed with his subjects, we tell him, well, why don't you look into your own background? Since we call this very simply, there should be a humbling factor. Therefore, someone who's got it all put together, he's got a wonderful, he's got a chosh of a family, and he's got he's a righteous, sinless type individual, you wouldn't want to have him appointed as the leader. So the question had been, why did his kingdom not last? It's because he didn't have any doifi. We continue. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Bipnei ma nenash shol. Rashi says, nenash shol ovo lidei dover sholov nital mimeno machas. What was the reason that Shol was brought to this situation, that he stumbled, so to speak, and as a result, he lost his kingdom? Answer, Mipnei shemochal al kvodo. Because he compromised, he was conciliatory regarding his honor's violation, the violation of his honor. Shinemar, the pasuk says, "Uvnei Blial Omru Mayo Shienu Zev Yivazu Vlaviu Lo Mincha Vayika Machrish." The youth, the empty ones, when Shaul was appointed king, said, how is this guy going to help us? And they disparaged him, and they didn't bring him a gift, which they should have done in his honor. And Shaul did not respond. He was kemacharish. He didn't stand up for his honor. Uksiv vayal nochosh ha'amoni vayichan al yovish gilad v'chulei. And as a result of that, a battle ensued. The Rashi says, "Uksiv ayal nochash amoni umaskana de milsa shomer Yisrael mi ha'oimer shol yimlo chalenu," and that bitmiha, that's in a tone of wonderment. "Tenu hu anoshim v'nimus v'anemiseim v'omer lo yumas ish hayom hazeh." So you see that Shol was conciliatory to those that had belittled him and besmirched him. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Yotzadak. Call Talmud Chacham. She'eno, we're at the top of Daf Chof Gimel. She'eno no kein v'noter ken nochash. Eino Talmud Chacham. Any Torah sage that is not vengeful and grudge-bearing as a serpent is not a Talmud Chacham. So what we just said, and it needs clarification, is that a Talmud Chacham is expected to be someone who is vengeful and grudge-bearing. Well, that's a horrible-sounding thing, isn't it? So the Gemara asks, and we have triangles as a series indicator, indicating a number of questions that will appear on this topic. V'hoksi v'losikom v'losito. Does the Torah not warn explicitly not to be vengeful nor to bear grudges? The Gemara answers, yes, the Torah does warn against that type of behavior and that type of attitude, but hahu b'mamon hu dichtiv. That has to do with financial matters, dichtiv. And the Tanaic source will illustrate this, desanyo. Let's read that last phrase again. Ahu b'mamon hu dichtiv. That posuk of lo sikar lo sitar is within the realm of money and finances. Desanyo, the Tanaic source illustrates this. Ezu nekama nekima ezu netira. What is meant by nekima and what is meant by netira? Nekima is vengefulness, and netira is bearing a grudge. Nekima equals amar lo ashileni magolcha. Person, Mr. A, approached Mr. B and said, will you loan me your hatchet? Omar lo, lav. No, I'm not going to loan it to you. L'machar, Omar lo, who? So, the next day, B turns to A and says, Ashileni kardumcha. Will you loan me your axe? Omar lo, eini mashilcho kedero shlo shaltani. I'm not going to loan to you, just like you didn't want to loan to me. Zu, hinekima. That's called vengefulness. But you see, that involves matter of financial concern, use of property, use of utensils. Fiezu hi netira. What is an illustration of bearing a grudge? Amalei hashileni kardumcha. Mr. A asked Mr. B, loan to me your axe. Amalei lo. No, I'm not loaning it to you. Lamochar amalei hashileni chalukcha. The next day, Mr. B asks Mr. A, can you loan me one of your shirts? Omar lo, hey loch, here, take the shirt. Eini kamoscha shelo shaltani. I'm not like you, who didn't want to loan. Zuhi netiro. That is bearing a grudge. Or even though you, Mr. A, dealt poorly with Mr. B, when Mr. B puts in a request, well, let's go over that example again. When even though Mr. A dealt poorly, was not kindful to Mr. B, when Mr. B is approached for an act of kindness on behalf of Mr. A, he reminds Mr. A, he says, I'm going to give what you want, I'm going to supply with you what you need, and I'm not going to be like you. The Gemara continues, Vitzara de Gufa lo, and when it comes to vengefulness in the context of, emotional damage, are you saying there is no problem with being vengeful? Up till this point, we said that a Talmid Chacham should be noikein v'noiter k'nochash. We then asked, but the Torah says you're not supposed to be like that. The Gemara answered, that's true with regard to dinei momenis, matters of financial concern. But when it comes to matters of your, emotional concern, you can be vengeful. Well, is that really so? And that's what we're asking now. But tsara degufa lo, and regarding your emotional setback or problem that arose out of someone doing you in, are you saying that there is that the din of lo sika lo sita doesn't apply? V'ha tanya, we have the following source: haneir lovin veino lovin. Those people that are disparaged and don't do so in return, shemin cherpos veino meshivim. They hear their own disparagement and do not answer. People that perform mitzvahs out of their love of the Almighty and are accepting smechim, literally would mean they're joyful with their yisur and their troubles. So people like this, that the beloved of the Almighty are like the have the strength of the sun as it starts shining. What's the point here? We see here that if a person is insulted, if he's disparaged, and he's you see that he is not to answer, he's not to respond, he's not to take vengeance. The Gemara explains, Le'olam denokit lei belibe. Actual vengefulness, being remaining quiet, that's true. However, he's allowed to bear it in his heart. That's nokit lei belibe. Let's take a look at Rashi. It's third line from the top. Denokit belibe ve'im bo acher linkum. Let's say a Talmud Chacham, we'll call him Rabbi A, was insulted by Mr. B. Now, this source tells us that Rabbi A shouldn't start reprimanding or insulting Mr. B, who had insulted the rabbi. However, Rashi says, if, however, this rabbi who was, in fact, where he was embarrassed, sees Mr. C coming along to take retribution from Mr. B, who had insulted the rabbi, that is okay. That's the olam denokit le belibe, the rabbi who was insulted. True, he should not respond, but he's allowed to bear it in his heart. The Gemara asks, V'amar Rava, anyone who is forgiving, he's mavir amidosa, means he behaves in a way beyond his natural tendency. Someone like that, so he is mavirin lo al kol pshav. That means all of his sins are overlooked, just like he overlooked his own natural tendency. So measure for measure, the Almighty will overlook this person's sins. So what do we see here? We see that you should be forgiving and not nokit le belibe. The Gemara says, "De mefaisu le umefais." This idea of, well, so let's say, in order to resolve these two ideas of, on the one hand, nokit le belibe, and on the other hand, being mafra midosov, It all depends. Did Mr. B apologize to Rabbi A? So if he tried to appease him, so then you are you are appeased. That's umefais, and you respond to the appeasement and become appeased. Then we say you should be mavir al midoso, be forgiving. However, if he's not approached, then if he wants to have a vengeful feeling in his heart, in his emotion, he is entitled to that. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.